This is The Headline with Brandon Waltons, bringing you the biggest stories from across Texas. The Headline gives you the news you need to be an informed citizen.
Well, hello, everybody. Happy Friday. Thank you for joining us on The Headline. I'm Brandon Waltons, the managing editor at Texas Scorecard, and we're going to take a look at some of the biggest stories from across the state. This week, of course, if you're watching live, please feel free to let us know where you're watching from. Let us know if you have any questions as you follow along. Look, Texas Democrats are dropping out of the legislature like flies. We're going to talk about that and some other issues with Jeremy Kitchen right here, a Capitol correspondent. But first, before we get to that story, Jeremy, I have to ask, what in the world is happening with Louie Gohmert?
It's definitely odd, right? So to kind of back up, yeah. For those that may remember about, I guess, 10 days ago, East Texas Congressman Louie Gohmert made this kind of announcement or pronouncement that he was exploring a run for Texas Attorney General. And, you know, the bet would be if I could raise $1 million in 10 days, I'm going to go ahead and get in the race. Well, today is the 10th day.
Yeah.
And radio show host Mark Davis, he was supposed to be on Mark Davis's show and make this kind of this announcement today. And very oddly, for those that may have listened to the show, you may have heard that you go in and you hear like Louie is not there. He didn't come at 8:35. He didn't come at 9:05. He didn't show up at all for it. And so it's unclear whether or not, one, he made the $1 million, or two, intends to run for Texas Attorney General. So,
right. Well, it'll be interesting to see. I mean, my guess, and I think Mark Davis sort of speculated, was that, well, if he wasn't on the show, wasn't like excited to come on, perhaps that means that he did not raise the $1 million.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I would assume that if you raise the million, you'd probably be excited to say you raised the $1 million and, hey, I'm in the race and I'm in it to win it. You know, if he did get in, right, he would be joining an already pretty crowded field of challengers to the incumbent Republican Attorney General Ken Paxton. I mean, you've got the likes of Eva Guzman, former Supreme Court Justice for Texas. You've got George P. Bush, current land commissioner who's running. You've got Matt Krause, a current state representative from up there in Hazlitt. And so it would already be a crowded field for sure. So, yeah.
Interesting. Well, we'll see if he comes out and announces anything about that campaign in the next day or two.
Sure.
We'll take a look. next story, I want to say, you know, you've got state agencies that are really going rogue. We've reported, actually, this is breaking news right now. We reported a couple weeks back about the Department of Family Protective Services having their own critical race theory course that they required for employees. Now that that's been exposed, and you had former State Senator Don Huffines, who's a gubernatorial candidate, leading the charge on revealing that, now that that's been exposed, it's officially been withdrawn. Employees are not required to take that course. Like I said, this is breaking. We've got an article live at TexasScorecard.com about that from our own Michael Quinn Sullivan, and you can check that out right now to see the details about that. But look, it's not just CRT training. We're also seeing vaccine mandates from some state agencies, notably the University of Texas, Texas A&M, and some others. And, you know, this is interesting because people have been following multiple stories here. We've seen that President Joe Biden came out and said he was going to implement vaccine mandates. Part of that was through a rule through OSHA saying that large employers, 100-plus employees, have to require COVID vaccines or testing. That's been held up right now. It's kind of temporarily frozen as it moves through the courts. There's another part that says if you're a federal contractor, like, say, a hospital, right, somebody who does contracts with Medicare or Medicaid, then you have to require all your employees to be vaccinated. This has not been frozen in courts.
That's correct. And all of this, despite the fact that you had at the kind of a few weeks ago, the waning days of the last most recent special session, you had Governor Abbott do kind of this parallel thing where he issued an executive order and then asked the legislature to address this issue. Of course, the session concluded, the legislature didn't address it. And then you've got this executive order with penalties and it seemingly being ignored by these agencies.
Yeah, interesting to see that because this executive order has been ignored. You've got, you know, literally University of Texas, like I said, UT Health in Houston, Texas A&M with over 500 government contracts being affected by this. Similarly, by the way, you have the Texas A&M University putting some students on conduct probation for refusing to take COVID tests. But you have all this happening, and yet the legislature has not been called back to meet on this, despite calls from the Republican Party of Texas to do so.
That's right. And I think the GOP has collated the names. The Texas GOP has collated the names. I think we're up to 20 now lawmakers who have called for a fourth special session, at least to specifically address this issue, among other things. I know the GOP has a list of kind of their other legislative priorities as well on top of this. But, you know, look, it can't go without saying that other states are leading on this issue, right? I mean, you've got other states that have called their legislatures into special sessions specifically to address employer or prohibition on employer vaccine mandates. And Texas has kind of mummed the word. We haven't heard anything from Governor Abbott on this outside of a few weeks ago when he was like, oh, I don't think we should, there's a need for a special session.
And so I don't know. We'll see. I mean, we kind of ask the question every week, will there be a fourth special session?
Right.
It's still unclear. Important to note that just yesterday you had in Florida Governor Ron DeSantis signing a legislation to go after vaccine mandates in Brandon, Florida, interestingly of all places, right?
Sure.
And so perhaps some of the pressure from other states will force them to act.
Potentially. I mean, we'll see. We're kind of in that weird time frame, too, where I doubt they want to do anything near Thanksgiving, right? And between Thanksgiving and Christmas, historically, has been kind of a the legislature doesn't convene during that time frame, right? So what does that mean before, even though there is a current stay on it, before I think it was the January 4th, deadline that they originally had, we're running out of time.
Yeah, you've got employers in December and January looking at potentially losing their jobs. And the question is, when that happens, will that be enough to push action?
Sure.
I don't know. It's interesting to note that because you said, you know, we've got Thanksgiving, you've got Christmas. When we talk about a special session, we always talk about the 30-day special session, but that's the maximum amount of days that it can be. There's nothing saying they have to meet and spend the entire 30 days, especially if the issue set was limited, like a vaccine mandate or like a couple other issues. And that's kind of part of the Republican Party of Texas's push as well. They've been saying, hey, you don't need to spend 30 days. Just come here for 4 days.
That's right. I think they've been using the hashtag 4-day-4th,
I think
is what it is. And the estimate there is like there is no need for us to do the maximum allowable 30 days. We can get this done in 4 days, right? And you've seen at least 20 lawmakers say that they believe that's true.
Right. And so we'll see if that that list continues to grow as concerned citizens continue contacting their lawmakers, contacting Governor Abbott, telling them to call them back for a fourth special session.
Sure.
We'll see what happens in the coming weeks. But when the legislature returns for their next regular session, in 2023, the Texas House, at least, is going to have some Democrats, even more Democrats now, that are not going to be returning.
That's right. You had quite a few announcements this week for various Democrats either not seeking re-election to anything, just kind of being done, or some not seeking re-election to their current positions and going for other things. You had San Antonio area Democrat State Representative Ina Menjarez, who announced that she's running for Bexar County Judge. You had Joe Deschotel, who's a long-term Democrat, retiring, I think, after 24 years from down there in Beaumont, announced that he will not be returning. He's a current chairman in the House of Representatives. You've got Alex Dominguez, who announced a few weeks ago that he was exploring a run, but confirmed that he is running for the kind of the old Senate seat, Senate District 27 seat that Senator Eddie Lucio, long-term Democrat from down in the Valley, announced, I guess, a few weeks ago he would not be returning. And then you've got people like Garnett Coleman, long-term Houston area Democrat, been there for upwards of 30 years, announced yesterday that he would not be seeking re-election. Of course, he's had health complications and what have you. And then you've got, you know, the kind of this perennial thing we keep talking about, Michelle Beckley.
Yeah, I want to take a second to this.
Sure.
I feel like we almost need a segment on the show, a regular segment to talk about what Michelle is running for, Michelle Beckley.
Right.
This is a liberal Democrat from up in DFW, notably has blue hair. I mean, these are, you know, these are the things people think of when you think of Michelle Beckley, one of the Democrat quorum breakers. Let's give a little bit of background. Explain the move she's made before, and then we'll explain this week's
move. I believe it was in early July. Skipping quorum, right? Michelle Beckley, a current state representative from up in the Carrollton area, progressive Democrat, to your point, made the announcement while she had busted quorum while in Washington, D.C. from her hotel room, that she was running for U.S. Congress challenging Republican incumbent Beth Van Dyne for her congressional seat up there. That's the Irving area, yes. I believe, seat. That was before the redistricting process took place in the most recent special session. As redistricting was happening, as the debate and deliberations were happening, it became very obvious that the maps that were being proposed had written her out of that congressional district, as well as, I believe, kind of her House district was made more favorable to a Republican candidate. So you saw Michelle suspend her campaign in kind of the later time in October for Congress. She even had a tweet, something to the effect of like, what do I run for? I don't know what to run for.
If there's nothing for me to run for, what am I going to do? Yeah, well, now I guess she's answered that question. She's figured out what she's going to run for.
That's right. She's going to run for the Democrat nomination for lieutenant governor. I say run for the Democrat nomination because there are other Democrat challengers in that race. So she would have to get past that first.
Yeah, Mike Collier, right, who was the nominee back in 2018.
Right.
Matthew Dowd, who's a former Bush staffer. And now she's entering that race.
Right.
And, I mean, I don't know. It'd be interesting to see those debates.
Sure. No, absolutely. And she's already taken to social media. Her big line that she kind of keeps repeating is, you know, we've ignored the grid. You ignored the grid. And you instead, Lieutenant Governor Patrick focused on all these other issues. And so that's the kind of motif she's going with, I guess.
Yes. You've got one Democrat who won't be returning as a Democrat, at least.
That's right.
That is State Representative Ryan Guillen, who announced this week in a big press conference alongside Governor Greg Abbott, Speaker Dade Phelan, and others, that he is switching parties. He's going to be a Republican now.
That's right. In his favor, you've got Ryan Guillen, long-term Rio Grande Valley area, kind of South Texas area representative, who has generally been on kind of the more conservative side of his former party, the Democrat Party. Most rating schemes have him in kind of the top one or two of the Democrat caucus. He was, you know, notably he voted for the heartbeat bill that passed during the regular session. Catholic Democrat, right, pro-life Democrat, he voted for constitutional carry that passed during the regular session, opposite of the majority of his former caucus. And so it's not necessarily a surprise that he's changing his partisan branding, I guess you can say. But there's kind of this debate on whether he did that for the purpose of he now subscribes and fully believes in the Republican kind of platform and principles, or if it was more for self-preservation, right?
Right, that district is now a Republican-leaning district.
That's right. Yeah, in the course of the redistricting kind of deliberations, that district was given pretty significantly written in such a way that is more favorable to a Republican candidate. And so I'm sure you saw the writing on the wall for that.
Sure. Maybe it's a little bit of both. I think it'll be interesting to see. I mean, he certainly got a lot of support. You had the Republican Party of Texas coming out. I'm supporting Ryan Guillen and his party switch. A number of statewide officials as well as other lawmakers. And so, and then you had, you know, on the flip side, predictably, you had the Democrat Party saying, oh, well, we didn't really much care for him to begin with, right?
That's right. Turncoat. You know,
yeah, sure. Exactly. So kind of predictable there. What does this mean as far as, so how many retirements are we up to now?
In the House, I believe it's 23. And I have to be careful saying retirements because some are, in fact, running for other positions in the legislature, right? But there's 23 House lawmakers that have no intention of being reelected to the House.
Okay. What about Republicans versus Democrats?
There's 10 Democrats and 13 Republicans.
Okay, interesting. So
that's in the House, right?
Okay.
The Senate, there's four. There's one Democrat and three Republicans.
Interesting. So I guess the question is there, I mean, look, that's a big opportunity, even if that number doesn't grow, which it could potentially, we could potentially see a few more added before the filing deadline next month. But even if that number doesn't change, this is a pretty big opportunity for conservatives.
Absolutely. I mean, turnover, I think arguably you could always say that turnover is always good, right? Kind of get some fresh blood in there, certainly. But certainly coming off the heels of a redistricting cycle where a lot of these lawmakers are having to run, many of them are having to run in new districts with new constituencies, right? And so certainly provides an opportunity.
Certainly. Well, and the election season is starting to heat up. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention this real briefly, but we did have this week an announcement from Robert Francis Beto O'Rourke, right, is getting on his skateboard and he's going to try it again.
Right.
This is somebody who was a former congressman, right, from El Paso, ran against Senator Ted Cruz in 2018, right. Lost, ran for the presidential nomination, lost, and is now saying he wants to run for governor and lead the state.
That's right. I think it was dubbed the worst kept secret, right? Everyone kind of knew that this was, at least he was positioning himself for this sort of thing. And so his announcement didn't necessarily come as a surprise to a lot of people. But the question on everyone's mind is, if he loses, he'd be a three-time loser.
Yeah, it's kind of a three strikes, you're out thing, maybe.
Right, sure.
I don't know. We'll be following that. Certainly you've seen the candidates, right, who are challenging, who are running for the Republican nomination for governor, all of them speaking out, saying they're happy to take Beto on.
Sure.
We'll be following that race as well. But another race that is heating up is a race up in North Texas. Okay, State Representative Stephanie Click is being put on notice, this time from an ad running in her district by the conservative response team, taking aim at her role in killing legislation that would have banned gender modification procedures in minors. We'll talk about that, but first let's take a look at that clip.
Sex change operations on minors are sadistic torture, but remain legal in Texas because Stephanie Click killed the bill to stop them. Tell Stephanie Click to apologize for keeping sex change operations on minors legal in Texas. Tell Click it's time she resigns.
Pretty hard-hitting ad, but you know, explain a little bit of the background on this. Why is Stephanie Click so tied to this child gender modification ban that
sure.
has not made it through the legislature?
Sure. Stephanie Click is the chairman of the House Public Health Committee.
Mm-hmm.
And so the bills that were related to this issue, which, by the way, is a priority of the Texas GOP.
Yes.
But the issues that are related to that go through her committee as a part of the bicameral legislature, right?
Yep.
And there were several that were filed in the regular legislative session earlier this year. And as they were making their way through the process, they all kind of did different things depending on which one you looked at.
Mm-hmm.
But she was a part of the reason that the few bills that did make it through that portion of the process got slow walked, if you will, and eventually did not make it through the overall legislative process.
Well, and now she has earned three primary
right.
challengers so far in the Republican Party that are all essentially challenging her from the right on this issue.
Yeah, that's what it appears. I think you've got a gentleman named David Silvey, mm-hmm. David Lowy, U.S. Army veteran. You've got Anthony Reed, who
yep.
is a former Haltom City councilman,
yes.
former legislative staffer himself, who have announced all have made commentary
mm-hmm.
So far in their announcements that they are challenging her on this issue and others, and certainly come from her right.
I mean, but you're seeing this all over. I mean, we've got an article up this week from our own Aaron Anderson about Congressman Van Taylor, somebody who certainly comes from the conservative wing of the party. He has two challengers from the right. But this is, you know, potentially due to some of the votes he's taken, especially this term.
That's right. I mean, it's another good example of, you know, this is someone who, when he served in the state legislature, was generally kind of seen as this kind of conservative bastion lawmaker, right? Generally voted right on almost everything that came up, fiscally responsible votes,
yep.
all of those sorts of things. Went to Congress, I guess it was four years ago, whenever it was, and a lot of people, especially the now two challengers, are taking issue with some of the votes, especially he's taken this last year. And saying, you know, why he's different. He's different than he was when he went in.
Yes. Andrew Murr, state representative, also getting a challenger from the right this week.
That's right. So Andrew Murr, I believe he comes from, what is it, Kimball County, represents like kind of the Kerrville
mm-hmm.
area up to Junction, that sort of thing. His district notably was changed during the redistricting process. They added four or five counties, kind of went further west towards Fort Stockton. Andrew Murr got a challenger in Wesley Verdell. Some may recognize that name. He was a former candidate in a congressional race up there with the now Congressman Austin Pfluger, where there were like 10 or 11 Republicans, mm-hmm. I think, in that primary race. But he joined, and he specifically is announcing his challenges as far as kind of what he perceives as weak leadership, someone who's not standing up for those folks in the district. He specifically cited, however, that, you know, Murr was the author of the election integrity bill, the one that ended up passing in the second special session. He was also, since he was the author, he allowed that amendment to get on there, to get adopted onto the overall bill that ended up passing, that lowered the penalty for illegal voting. And so he cited that. He cited Murr's vote to allow Democrat chairman in the House, and so certainly.
Yeah, and this is, you know, you talk about that issue, right, of the election integrity legislation actually lowering the penalty for illegal voting. This is an issue that the Republican Party of Texas has been saying as well. That's right. We need a fourth special session on. And again, this is an issue that the governor has so far not weighed in on as far as for a fourth special session.
It should be noted, though, that issue was added to the third special session, right? Because activists highlighted it.
Yep.
And the Senate did pass a bill to fix it. Mm-hmm. The House didn't take it up at all.
Right. Speaker Phelan, Dade Phelan, said, we're not going to take this up. We're not going to relitigate it. And certainly kept true to his word there.
Right.
Last thing I want to mention, speaking of the Republican Party of Texas, Texas GOP is really kind of leading against the Republican National Convention, right? That's the national party. That's the national group that started, announced this last week that they are going to have a new pride coalition, right? For LGBTQAI plus, right? I think that got that right. I don't know. I can't keep track anymore. But this new coalition with Chairman Matt Rinaldi, the Republican Party of Texas, coming out against this and saying, quote, we do not believe building GOP versions of left-wing movements further our cause and do not support this move by the Republican National Committee. And, you know, look, when you look at the party platform, when you look at what, you know, the Republican Party, at least in Texas, is supposed to stand for, he's not wrong.
That's right. There are certainly planks that speak to or support his position, right, which I assume would certainly be the impetus for him saying that. I think this speaks to a much larger kind of, I'm not going to say rift, that's not the right word, but there are folks within the party, the national and state partisan structure, that do believe that this issue should be something that's kind of this big tent philosophy, if you will, for the party. And this speaks to this ongoing debate and fracture. I mean, every convention cycle, is, in my memory, there's always been controversy here in Texas for whether the log cabin Republicans should have a table, right? And so this speaks to that issue, sir.
Yes, and so we'll see. You know, I think this plays into a more national conversation we don't have time for about Ronna McDaniel, who's in charge of the RNC, and her getting some flack from conservatives. But interesting to see Texas playing a role in the fight there to strengthen the RNC. Well, that's all the news we have right now. I want to make a few announcements, though, for folks. We'll go ahead and switch cameras there. A few announcements for folks. We've got the Conservative Leader Awards December 4th in Irving, Texas. Okay, if you haven't gotten your tickets yet, you can breathe. You still have a little bit of time, but actually not much. Okay, ticket sales end November 24th. Oh, November 24th, that's a long ways away. No, false. It's actually next Wednesday. Wednesday, it's already November 24th. But don't wait until then. You can go ahead and get your tickets online. We've got the link down there if you're watching. Get your tickets. You're not going to want to miss it. It's always a great time getting to join other grassroots activists, conservatives from across the state in celebrating the people who actually go out there on the front lines and fight. So hope you get your tickets. Hope to see you there on December 4th in Irving. Also want to say that we've got applications still open for our fellowship here at Texas Scorecard for spring, summer, and fall of 2022. You can go to texasscorecard.com/fellowship. Find the link in the comments there. If you know somebody between the ages of 18 to 25 who wants to come down here and work alongside us and get paid for the opportunity, send them that link, texasscorecard.com/fellowship. Well, I want to thank everybody for watching. If you have any questions after watching this video, please don't hesitate to go down the comments or reach out to us. But for right now, thanks for joining. Have a great weekend.
Thank you for listening to The Headline from Texas Scorecard. We're live every Friday at 11 a.m. on the Texas Scorecard Facebook page to talk about the biggest stories of the week, so check us out there or listen to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, whatever platform you prefer. And while you're there, you can also check out the ever-growing line of podcasts and programming provided by Texas Scorecard.